It's Skyline time. Oh, yeah. That amazing Cincinnati delicacy was made by my wife last night for dinner. And then promptly, we went to Bell's National Kitchen for a kill lifter with a friend. How about that? That's an evening. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever it is that you listen to Doug Franz Unplugged, my family greatly appreciates it. My name is Doug Franz, and you have found the only podcast in the world devoted to covering the four major professional sports teams of one great American city. Suns, Cardinals, D-backs, Coyotes, ASU, U of A, GCU, and a little updates on Rattlers Rising, Merck, the PGA, all in Phoenix, Arizona. Not quite. Maybe I don't run through all, I don't know. Oh, hey, how are you? I'm in a great mood, Had I love Skyline. That's the chili spaghetti that all of us from Southwest Ohio think is basically a drug. You got to have it. And my wife shocked me with it today. I say today, yesterday, now, because it's, you know, it's already 4:38 in the morning. I'm so behind on Unplugged today, though, because I got a friend in town from college, and I went to the east side to get a beer because he's staying at the Fairmont. And so I thought, okay, let's meet, you know, there. Not that that's halfway or anything from Goodyear, but, you know, you got to support Bell's. So I went over there, had a beer with him, a great time, then came back, watched that monstrosity of a Diamondbacks game, and then started putting everything together to get through today's version of Doug Franz Unplugged to make sure that I'm covering everything that I want you to know about. A lot of you helped me when and answered my call as your commander-in-chief to the Unplugged Army. Got a lot of good texts, tweets, Instagram posts, and emails yesterday. Thanks. You really helped the show. I think what I'm going to do is when we're not as busy, I'm going to go through a lot of them on air. Today is just a packed show, so I didn't want to do it today. But when we're not as busy, I'm going to go over some of those on air and then tell you how I feel about some of the things you said and how you've helped me. So I appreciate that. Number two, make sure you're paying attention today. And please jump all over social media and really promote today's show for me. Use hashtag DBACS and hashtag Unplugged Army when you put out something. Tag the DBACS. I thought Zach Gallen was a great guest. I think you're really going to enjoy just the laid-back storytelling I had with Zach. And this was from last week, but I got the editing done, and I want to air it for you today. And I saved it, I admit, until he pitched. So he pitches today against the Giants and hopefully take the series as the D-backs won on Monday and just got embarrassed yesterday. So there's that. And then lastly, I got to tell you about lunch. So I had lunch yesterday at this, you know, famous Phoenix place that everybody seems to hang out no matter where you are in the socioeconomic political ladder. People are always going to the Henry. And I have a friend that just loves the Henry. So I met him over there for lunch. They told me it was a 45-minute wait unless I could find a spot at the bar. So I walked over to the bar, and there was one of those situations where there was this woman that was sitting in one seat, and then there were empty seats on each side of her. And there were no other empty seats in the bar. And I came up behind her and I said, excuse me. And oh my gosh, this woman jumped. I mean, it scared me. She jumped so bad. It was one of those. And I felt terrible. And then she said, no, that's just who I am. This happens all the time. I said, hey, well, is it okay? Would you like me to scoot over? Yes, I will. Okay, great. So she anticipated it was wonderful. So my buddy gets there. And if you want to know who it was Hugh Hallman, the man that you just met the other day, that he joined us to talk about the Tempe side of things on the arena debate for the Coyotes. So we were eating lunch, and she starts listening into the conversation. I don't have any problem with that. She's new to the area. She starts talking to us about some different things, and then she hears about me doing a podcast, and then Hugh is such a nice man. He's basically trying to recruit a member of the Unplugged Army for us. So he's talking to her about it. And then eventually she's now eating lunch with us. So she's totally involved in the conversation. And boy, did I learn a lot. It was a very eye-opening experience. she explained how women are not in touch enough with their bodies. She explained to me how much people follow lockstep with different elements of society, and how there's so many more things that are going on that people don't realize, and that we're all kind of just following along like animals and following the leader, but not really challenging things. And then she brought up the subject of this dimension. And I said, oh, you know, kind of like Doctor Strange. And if you haven't seen any of the Doctor Strange movies, it's Doctor Strange is a Marvel comic hero that travels through different dimensions. And so she explained to me, I was shocked by this, I'm sure you will be too, that parts of Doctor Strange are based on truth and true stories. So as soon as I knew that, well, then there had to be more Doug Franzes. So I wanted to know, are there other Doug Franzes in different dimensions that are doing better with getting fired than this one is? And she didn't know. She said that there's no way to know that. But we can try to find out together. So I thought, hey, you know, anything that could help Doug Franz unplugged. So I'll tell you about that. So soon I will be traveling to a different dimension to try to learn how can Doug Franz unplugged, how well is Unplugged doing in a different dimension? And then when I know that, I will bring back the lessons, of course, here. I have no idea how long I'll be gone. I don't know, is it instantaneous, or I have so much to learn, and I don't know how this affects the space-time continuum. Like, in a different dimension, will I see my parents as a lot younger? And I certainly don't want to run into them or get hit by a car or something. So I've got a lot to learn, and I can't wait to share it with you as soon as I know more. Coming up next, it's your 4-Minute Offense on Doug Franz Unplugged. Did you call yet? 602-899-7000. I've been telling you about Ideal Home Loans for years now. They have the mortgage on my home. It's easy for me to say the number over and over again, 602-899-7000. We chose them because, well, I had a friend that said they're good. That was really it. But then when I got to know them, the president, Brent, and talking to him, I realized this is what we want. I appreciated the way Joel, who was our actual guy that handled the loan as a loan officer, listened to what we had to say. That's why I made up the phrase, first they listen, then they lend. The reason why that matters is, let's say right now you're a little nervous because of interest rates, but you've got some bad credit card debt, and maybe your car's getting a little old. This is an amazing opportunity. Housing prices are not only stabilizing, they're just barely starting to come back down the mountain a little bit. That means you're losing the equity in your home. That's money you're losing. But you can call Ideal Home Loans before it's gone. 602-899-7000 or go to idealhomeloans.com.
Four minute offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in San Francisco.
It just got out of hand, spiraled out of control quickly.
Yes, it did. That's manager Torrey Lovello on the Diamondbacks' 13-0 loss. They were down 8-0 in only 2 innings. Dallas Keuchel goes 2 1/3, gives up 7 earned runs, but his defense didn't help him.
Line drive, it's going to carry right, and McCarthy falls down. 2 runs are going to score. On the move is VR. He's got a shot for 3. The throw. Not in time, and it gets away and into the dugout, and we got a Little League home run.
It was certainly Little League. Jake McCarthy appeared to lose the ball in the sun. Torrey Lovello disagrees.
No, he said it had nothing to do with the sun. It's just he went to make a break on the ball and just slipped.
Diamondbacks wrap up the series with the Giants at 12:45. Zach Gallen on the hill for the Snakes. Mercury, a loser in double overtime, 118-107. Head coach Vanessa Nygaard.
I thought our team had a tremendous amount of fight. And there were several times I thought where people might have counted us out, but just the collective effort of the group was pretty outstanding.
Mercury return home Thursday, 7 o'clock, taking on Washington. The latest on Kevin Durant from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski.
The Miami Heat have been certainly one of the most determined teams to try to acquire Kevin Durant since he asked for that trade.
However, an amazing piece might be available to Brooklyn in a trade. The Jazz general manager says he is inclined to listen to offers for Donovan Mitchell, which could mean there's a 3 or 4 team trade in the works for the Suns and Nets, or Miami and Brooklyn. The Open Championship begins tonight in Scotland. Yesterday, Rory McIlroy admitted he was happy that Greg Norman was not part of the champion celebration.
It's the 150th Open Championship. That's what we need to focus on. And I think the focus would have been taken away a little bit if he had been here. So I supported that decision.
Even Jack Nicklaus weighed in on Greg Norman.
And unfortunately, he and I just don't see eye to eye in what's going on. I'm basically leaving it at that.
Rory was also asked what the excitement and hype of it being the 150th Open Championship.
Does that make it maybe better for the game if you get a player winning that isn't involved in LIV, do you think?
Selfishly, for me, yes, I think it would be better for the game.
But the strongest words came from the legend Tiger Woods.
I think that what they've done is they've turned their back on what has allowed them to get to this position.
On a golf note, what about the golf course?
It is weather dependent. The fairways are, I think, right now are faster than the greens.
ASU's Phil Mickelson tees off at 11:30 tonight. Speaking of ASU, the Chicago Bears have made a trade with the New England Patriots, picking up former Devil N'Keal Harry. In Washington, Commanders owner Daniel Snyder has agreed to testify in front of Congress. However, he wants his testimony to be considered voluntary and not a subpoena. The difference? He doesn't have to answer every question unless he's under subpoena. And finally, a Florida man is facing charges of grand theft of a vehicle, felony criminal mischief, 2 counts of resisting an officer, and possession of a concealed weapon as a convicted felon, carrying a concealed handcuff key, because clearly he was prepared for his arrest, possession of drug paraphernalia, felony failure, which I've never heard of, during apprehension. He had to be tasered to get him off of the getaway vehicle, which was a riding lawnmower.
You know you're a bad dude when you carry a handcuff key with you, a concealed handcuff key, when you just know this isn't going to end well on this riding lawnmower, so I better bring my handcuff key with me. My sound credits for today, I got everything golf-related from the Open Championship YouTube channel. I got the Torrey Lovello and the actually, Torrey Lovello is from Bally Sports Arizona. But the highlight I played for you is from MLB.com. And the Mercury were nice enough to send me Vanessa Nygaard sound, so that's where I got her from. And then the last sound credit is what I'm going to play for you now. Here's Adrian Wojnarowski. I got this from ESPN.com.
The Miami Heat have been certainly one of the most determined teams to try to acquire Kevin Durant since he asked for that trade. And, you know, they've talked to Brooklyn here in Las Vegas, and ultimately for Miami and Brooklyn specifically to do a deal, they're going to need a third team, perhaps even a fourth team. There's really not a one-on-one deal they can do. Bam Adebayo, Ben Simmons can't be on the roster together based on their contracts, and so they're going to need to be creative around the league to try to find a pathway to a deal. But teams like Miami, you know, the question they have to ask themselves, are asking themselves is, you know, how much do we give up that if we bring in Kevin Durant, are we a championship contender? How much of your infrastructure can you gut? Brooklyn's asking price is steep. Brooklyn continues to talk to a number of teams here in Vegas. No closer to a trade for Kevin Durant. But I think especially teams like Miami, Phoenix, who need help. They don't really have a one-on-one pathway to do a deal with Brooklyn. That makes it more complicated. You know, the Toronto Raptors, Scotty Barnes continues to be a non-starter for the Raptors in any Kevin Durant discussion. And so there's certainly been no progress there with Toronto. I think for right now, you know, this is a process that's going to continue and may continue beyond Summer League.
Okay, in the ever-present race for Kevin Durant, I think this is an interesting report combined with something else that you might have heard me just mention in the 4-minute offense. The Utah Jazz general manager has gone public and admits
that he's softened on his stance before. His stance before was we're building around Donovan Mitchell, so we're not listening to trade opportunities for Donovan Mitchell. He's backed off of that and said, you know what? We are in a rebuild here, so I'll listen. I don't think you say something like that just to try to announce to the world you've changed your mind in a matter of, you know, you're now an open person and you're telling everyone. Sometimes you say things to the media to kind of grease the skids for your fans to be prepared for the future. I think that's totally what the Jazz did. I think the Jazz have come to grips with the win now mentality that they had is gone. They don't have Quinn Snyder anymore. They've already made the decision to trade Rudy Gobert. They're looking at the rest of their team and saying, we were a long ways off before winning a championship. Now we seem even further with the rise of Golden State, rise back of Golden State. I think Utah's decided we're in a rebuild. So that means Donovan Mitchell's available. Now let's combine what Adrian Wojnarowski said with what we've been saying for a while. The Brooklyn Nets originally started the conversation for the Suns to get their hands on Kevin Durant at trade as Devin Booker. And you can imagine James Jones says, we're serious about this. Well, we are too. Well, no, you're not then. They want a player that's as close as they can get to an all-star or is an all-star. I think Donovan Mitchell is going to be a member of the Brooklyn Nets within the next week. With Adrian Wojnarowski saying that Miami is all over it, it could be Miami doing something and sending Donovan Mitchell to Brooklyn. What you need to do is get a Donovan Mitchell type of player and picks to Brooklyn. So you can do that with Utah. Now, what are you going to give Utah? You're still in kind of a tough boat because I don't know how many pieces Miami has that Utah would really want. Give up a ton of draft picks in the future. But if you're doing this to get Kevin Durant, aren't you a championship team? And then these draft picks you're trading are in the high 20s. I don't see how Utah would be all that thrilled with that. And that brings up the other point that Adrian Wojnarowski made, which is what other pieces to your team that you consider to be important to win a championship are you then giving to Utah that Utah really wants? That brings us back to Phoenix. The Suns have all future draft picks. Utah has some future draft picks. The Suns have Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges. I could easily see a scenario where you're trading Donovan Mitchell to Brooklyn, Kevin Durant to the Suns, and the Suns part with Mikal Bridges. And if they parted with Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson and picks, the trade is done. It's in. That would work in a heartbeat. The one thing is, where would you get more draft picks for the Brooklyn Nets? Because Utah has traded a lot of their first-round picks to Minnesota in the Rudy Gobert trade. So you might have to get a fourth team involved that's willing to give picks. That might be the Pacers. You could do a sign-and-trade with DeAndre Ayton, send him to Indiana. The Pacers send picks to Brooklyn. Brooklyn sends Kevin Durant to the Suns, and the Utah Jazz send Donovan Mitchell to Brooklyn. So now Brooklyn gets their picks and Mitchell. The Suns get Kevin Durant. The Pacers get DeAndre Ayton. And in order for this, the whole thing to fly, you probably have to get rid of both Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges. You tell me it's an or, I do that trade in a heartbeat. If I could actually have, and maybe even throw in Miles Turner, if I'm getting Miles Turner, I might have to give up both of them. I probably have to give up Bridges and Cam Johnson, which I really don't want to. But a lineup of Chris Paul at the point, Devin Booker at the two, and say Miles Turner at the four and Kevin Durant at the three. All right. All right. And the way that they like Dario Saric's passing, maybe it's both him and Miles Turner in the middle. and having them run the 4-5 as good passers. That would work. Now, you'd still need a backup point guard unless you believe Campaign can get his head screwed on straight. He really had a bad year last year. And they desperately need to get Chris Paul more rest next season. I think this is starting to come together. I went high as about 65% sure Kevin Durant was going to be a Sun. Started to not believe everything, but now, as soon as I saw this Donovan Mitchell news, I'm in. I think this is happening now. So anybody that's been getting sick of the DA talk, of the KD talk, who's doing what, when is something going to happen, I think that was the final piece. The only thing that's left to decide is this all in favor of Miami or Phoenix? Who's putting this thing together? Keep watching. Keep listening. And boy, am I, I'm pretty sure that that's the piece. And if you're Brooklyn, wouldn't you do it? I mean, if you have to trade Kevin Durant, wouldn't you do it for that package? I think you do. And then you either have Kyrie Irving or you trade him. So I would keep Kyrie Irving for now, and I would trade him at the trade deadline. Get that salary off the books and then pick up pieces when somebody's a little more desperate, a little more willing. But some people would disagree with me because of the obnoxiousness of the player option that right now Kyrie Irving is playing under. That's so big, it's hard to get a trade like that done in the regular season. It's a lot easier to do a trade like that in the postseason, or excuse me, in the offseason. I understand that, but I think you can be setting the groundwork for a long time. You know, January and February, you're still setting groundwork, and that would lead you enough time to get a trade like that done. So if anything happens, Kevin Durant-wise to the Suns, please pay attention to my Twitter handle, at UnpluggedDoug, and Papa Bear Sean and I will jump on and do another Twitter Spaces broadcast. If you've never had the opportunity to hear those, it's pretty cool. All you do is click on the link, and then all of a sudden, we turn your phone into a radio, and Sean and I are doing a live broadcast. And we'll look at the trade, how it affects the Suns and everything. So you get the beauty of a podcast here on Doug Franz Unplugged. Listen to this when you can. And then you also get the magic of, boom, something's happened. Immediately, Sean and I go on. But I totally believe within a week, this is now moving in the direction that we've been waiting. Okay, coming up next. I think you're going to love this. That's all I can tell you. I think you're going to absolutely love this. Zach Gallen, as you never heard him before. Zach is a guy after post games that just talks like this, and he just kind of mumbles. He's not a jerk. He just kind of mumbles his way through, and he doesn't really show his personality. Talk to him on an off day. What a good dude. One of my favorite conversations I've ever had. Zach Gallen, up next on Doug Franz Unplugged.
That the Diamondbacks were nice enough to just set me up in their great estate corner office that I'm actually in right now. I am in this small little room, but I'm right across from the clubhouse, so it makes it easy for guys to come over. And Zach Gallen is nice enough to come over, and the starting pitcher for the Diamondbacks is here on Doug Franz Unplugged. There is a defensive end for the Arizona Cardinals, Zach Gallen. And everybody in the media has to be obnoxious towards you because we all have to practice Zach Gallen to make sure that we enunciate. Do you even know about him? Do you follow other sports? How active are you outside of baseball and just being a fan?
Yeah, I've caught some wind that there is a player on the Cardinals, like you said, that is Zach Gallen. Yeah, so no, I follow, I try and stay up to date. I'm an Eagles fan, though, so I'm not, like, a huge Cardinals guy. I like basketball, so I'll follow the Suns. But, you know, I'm a Northeast guy, so I'm a Sixers guy.
Oh, okay,
you know?
Okay.
So, but, yeah, no, I try and keep up, you know, as best I can with other sports in the Valley. It's, you know, it's just what you do.
But are you Philly across the board?
No, just football and basketball. I don't really follow a lot of hockey, and I grew up a Cardinals fan. So the Phillies, yeah, they weren't very good when I was growing up. So I just somehow, you know, it was Cardinals. McGuire was on TV hitting a home run, it seemed like every night. So it was Cardinals. And then as I got older, I was like, you know, I really enjoy football and basketball. So I'm going to go with the Eagles and the Sixers.
How many guys have you noticed, either on your team or going up through the minors, are actual baseball fans? I mean, it's cool to me just to hear you talk about the Cardinals and loving anybody. I didn't care who it was, you know, as long as it wasn't the Cubs, I was happy.
Yeah. I stopped really being a fan probably once I got to college.
Okay.
You start to notice the business side of it, and you're like, okay, like, you know, baseball is, you know, could very well become a career. Yeah. And, you know, the chance of you getting drafted by the team you're a fan of is like 1 in 30. I got pretty lucky in that standpoint. But even then, by the time I was drafted by them, I really wasn't a fan as much anymore. I would say
that's
there's
so strange.
It's strange. Yeah. Like, it's just like, I could just feel it like more and more as I was getting older. Like, got to high school, I was like, okay, like, I like the Cardinals, but I'm not really like as obsessed as I was when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then got to college, and you're kind of like, yeah, you know, if the Cardinals are, you know, playing in the playoffs or whatever, like, you're rooting for them, but it's not like, you know, I'm following them all the time. But I think you'd be shocked. I think there's not many guys that are really like fans. I mean, obviously, you know, it's your employer. You might be working for a rival, you know, whatever it is. So like, yeah, there weren't many guys. I know some guys, like, you know, grow up in, you know, some of the guys I'd grow up, like I played with the Cardinals, they grew up in that area, and that's just like a whole different, like, you know, situation. So you're just kind of a lifelong Cardinals fan. But yeah, I'd say I think a lot of people would be shocked with how many people, you know, they're not really as fans as much. You get older, you see the business side of it.
Did it actually make it easier than getting traded from the Cardinals? I mean, if you grow up as a Cardinals fan, you're a Cardinal, and then they trade you. Normally that would just be a knife in the back, but if you already started to distance yourself, was it easier then?
Yeah, that was the final straw for them. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. No. Yeah, it was kind of that was like the real kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, like nail in the coffin of like, okay, this actually is a business. They mm-hmm. don't, it doesn't matter, you know, who you were a fan of as a kid. I know it was hard on some of my family members more so just because they knew I grew up a fan.
Yeah.
They thought I'd, you know, get to the big leagues with them. But for me, I was kind of already, you know, I remember having people reach out and, you know, they thought I was like more upset that I got traded, like, because I was a fan of them. And I was like, I'm more just like kind of unsure how this whole trade thing happens as opposed to like, you know, thinking I was going to be, you know, a Cardinal, you know, in the big leagues and whatnot. Yeah. So it was pretty easy. I'd kind of already made the disassociation of just like, you know, this is what it is. Like, this is what I do for a job. I'm not like you know, a kid watching them on TV.
But speaking of it as a job, you know, all of us that are wannabes, I couldn't hit a curveball, so I'm talking about players trying to hit curveballs is basically what happened. But we have no idea what it's like to get traded. I mean, it is the craziest idea that there is, that you are, hey, give me everything you have, be the most loyal player to our organization. Never mind, we're done with you. I don't care if you want to talk about the one to the Marlins or the one here, but what's that like? Which one stands out? Tell me I got traded story.
I could tell you both of them. They both kind of really stand out. And I think if you talk to anybody who gets traded, outside of those guys who get traded and, you know, going into that free agent year when it's like, okay, maybe you become too expensive and the team's not going to re-sign you, whatever. I would say 90% of those guys don't see it's coming. Granted, you'll have those, you know, super prospects who kind of the names get mentioned, you know, like Sandy Alcantara when I got traded from St. Louis to Miami. His was like the name that kind of was getting floated around the most. So you're kind of like, okay, I'm probably going to get traded. But the story I had from St. Louis was St. Louis would do these kind of like workout camps type of deal, you know, in the off season. I had prior engagements, like, you know, buddies getting married.
Okay.
One was right after the season, so I'd gone from high A to triple A that year. We played all the way until like pretty much the last week of September, and the first camp was like the first week of October. I'm like, so I'm not, like, they're off season, like, you know. Yeah. So I kind of was like, all right, I'm tired on that one. The second one, I had a buddy getting married and I wasn't able to make it. I'd already made the commitment, I was going to the wedding. So long story short, the Cardinals were like, well, we really need you to show up these camps. It got to the point where, you know, we were talking to the front office about, like, you know, listen, like, he's already got these commitments. This is the off season. You're not really paying him for it, all this stuff. Long story short.
And, of course, they think you're a bad seed now.
Exactly. Yeah. So it gets to the point where my representation is like, listen, they have this, you know, 2-day thing or whatever. Just go down there for 2 days. show face, like, you know, whatever. That's the best we can do. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So I'm thinking, all right, I get to go to Jupiter, Florida in December. Like, it'll be warm down there. It was 40 degrees. So I was already livid about it. It was 40 degrees. It was brutal. Go through the camp for 2 days. It was pretty eyewash, honestly. And I get to the end and meeting with the guy who was running the camp, who was like one of their medical directors. He was like, hey, yeah, you really didn't have to be here for this. So we thank you for coming. I'm like, I didn't have to be here, but you guys made a big stink about it. So I go to the Palm Beach airport. I'm flying home. I got a connector in Charlotte. And, you know, that's when, like, the Ozuna thing, like, they're like, okay, the Cardinals are real close to getting to Marcelo Ozuna. And the name that keeps getting mentioned is Sandy Alcantara. Oh, wow, that's crazy. I'm like, man, I wonder who else is going to get traded with Sandy. No, no. I take off. The trade hasn't been done. Well, you know, it hasn't been, you know, publicized yet. I land. I actually hadn't even touched the ground in the Charlotte airport. I'm like hovering, and I, you know, take out my phone, and it just starts vibrating like crazy. I'm like, oh man, this isn't good. I get a call from one of my agents, and then a bunch of text messages, and I'm like, he calls me, and I just like go to voicemail. And I'm like, oh, this can't be good. Yeah. So I go and check. Twitter is the first place I looked. I searched my name on Twitter, and just was like, traded. And I had all these people, like, you know, like I said, they were like, hey, man, it'll be all right, all this stuff. And I'm like, I mean, I got traded. Like, yeah, it stinks. Like, whatever. But, like, it's more like, now what do I do? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was kind of wild. They, like, made this big stink about me coming down there. And then they traded me on the plane ride home. They were probably like, yeah, let's get this guy out of here. Like, he didn't want to come to the camp. He's not one of those guys that we want. But, yeah, so that was kind of wild. And then when I got traded from Miami to here, I thought I was getting sent down. So, like, I'd got called up. I think there was an injury.
How did you lack confidence? Your AAA numbers, you destroyed it, and your pro numbers were solid for, you won't say it, I will, for a team that was doing terrible at the time. Why in the world would you think you were getting sent down?
Well, because one, I got called up of like, it's funny, I'm like, they cost me service time. It's like, you know, it's manipulating service time. But I'm like, you have no idea what's going on. It's like, yeah, you know, like you said, like I was having a really good year in AAA, and I'm just waiting. And like, it gets to a point where you're having a good year, you're like, the injury possibility starts to creep into your head. You're like, the longer I sit here, the longer I could get injured and be on the, you know, I wasn't on the 40 man is nothing yet. So you could be on the minor league DL, which for anyone out there, the minor league DL is way worse than the big league DL. It's, you know, the pay and the service time, you know, far outweigh the minor league DL. Yeah. So I was getting nervous. And I kind of just like really wasn't sure what was going on. So I get called up with, they had an injury to, I think it was Pablo Lopez, got called up. Had, you know, started to get really comfortable, started, you know, throwing fairly well, and one of those guys was coming off the DL. So I'm like, well, you know, I'm thinking I'm the odd man out, like, mm-hmm. even if I'm throwing well, I'm like, you know, they just called me up, they're gonna send me back down. They called me in the office, and I remember sitting in there, and Don Mattingly, the pitching coach, Mel Stottlemyre, and then Michael Hill were in there, and they're talking, and I blacked out the first like 2 or 3 minutes. I was like, I'm like, damn, dude, I got sent down. Like, this sucks. Like, I'm throwing well and they're going to send me back. Like, no way. And I'm like 2 minutes in there. I'm like, I should probably check back in to hear what's going on in this meeting, because I'm going to, like, people are going to ask me what happened.
You're in the meeting.
Oh, while I'm in the meeting. And I'm like, oh, I'll just check back in. And then, like, as I check back in, I'm listening. And like 10 seconds later, like, yeah, so we made a move. We traded you. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, at least I'm not getting sent down, hopefully.
Let's do this.
Meeting goes by, the rest, and they still didn't tell me where I was going. So I'm like, so where? And they're like, oh, we traded you to Arizona. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, Arizona's cool. I've never been there. I'm like, oh, I was there when I was like in high school, but I'm like, cool. I'm like, yeah, 10 minutes. So like after the meeting, I'm like, so now what? And they're like, they'll be in contact. Like, it's so pretty much the whole thing is that you don't know what's going on. Like, you're relying on your representation, one, to kind of walk you through it. And then two, you're just really waiting until the team that traded for you reaches out, and then they give you the plans. Like, once they get rid of you, they're like, you're not our problem anymore. So, yeah, so it was kind of wild. I thought I was getting sent down. And then you have that doubt in your head. You're like, man, am I going to AAA when I get there? And, like, and then I, you know, it was quickly assured. Like, I talked to Hayes. I talked to, I think, Fitz as well. And they were like, you're going to be up here. We're not sending mm-hmm. you to Reno. So I was like, all right, that's cool. Like, that's good. At least I'll stay.
But I have to say, I'm assuming never in your life have you had a beer with Jazz Chisholm. You've never, I'm sure that you've never spent one ounce of time in your life, but once you get linked, what's it like standing on the mound and the guy that the Marlins basically say, we like this guy more than we like you? How does that not get you juiced up to a level that's almost uncontrollable when you know deep down inside you don't have anything negative about the guy?
No, that's the thing. I had nothing negative. He's a great player. He's got great talent. So it's like, yeah, I'm just like, at the time, I didn't even know who he was. So I'm kind of just like, all right, cool. Like, they traded me for like a prospect. Like, that's cool. Like, yeah. Apparently this kid's pretty good, you know. And like I said, I already been traded once, so I got the business side of it. But I kind of had that feeling in Miami that I wasn't a priority. So, and then that just kind of like put the, like, you know, like I said, to use the nail on the coffin, I was like, kind of like, it's like, okay, I wasn't a priority here. It wasn't like, which is fine. Like, some teams just have a different, you know, plan for their guys. I'd heard that they thought I was going to peak at 23. So like, they thought that was like the best year I was going to have that year. So it was like, hey, let's just sell high on them. So I get it in that sense. But yeah, you get linked to a guy and it's like, you know, and then, you know, he, like I said, he was on the podcast talking about like whatever. So like, which is fine. Like, you got to use the chip on your shoulder, however it is. But I'm like, dude, I never had any beef with this guy, nothing. The two teams just figured that we were a good match in terms of trade, like two needs for a certain team. So I'm like, yeah. So I just kind of like, it definitely was, that's probably the game I pitched with the most emotion in my career that I can remember, at least in my pro career.
Did you like it?
I hated it. I don't like it. Cause I'm very methodical. My pregame playlist is slow. Like, it's just like, everything is like very mellow and chill. So for me to like, I mean, I would be out there and like, just like pumped up. And I'm like, one, I felt super sore after it. Cause like, I was throwing harder than I had, you know, probably the whole year. And two, which is like, you're out of control when you're out there. If you're pitching with emotion, that's just not me. So it was uncharted territory for me.
Now, since this is a podcast, other than this getting back to your parents, you can do whatever you want on it. Funniest thing that's ever been said on the mound?
Funniest thing that's ever... To be honest with you, I kind of like... It depends on what kind of a mood I'm in. Yeah. Most of the time, the mound...
Like, you're a chill dude, so I didn't know if somebody tried to ever break the ice with you.
I would have, okay, so there's never been one that's really stood out, but I had, when I was growing up, I was a teenager, I played with Matt Theis, who's with the Angels.
Okay.
And he was our catcher, one of our catchers. And he would come out and sometimes be like, dude, what do you want to get for lunch? And I'm like, we're trying to get a guy out, dude. You're worried about Chick-fil-A. Like, I'm like, so for me, like, I think some guys it would work, but I was more like, you're out here for usually not a good reason. It's usually, I've given up a couple hits and I need a breather, or we're trying to figure it out. And you're talking about Chick-fil-A. I'm like, dude, what do you like? So most of the time when like the like coaches come out, like if Strami comes out or whatever, I'm usually like kind of in my own planet. Yeah. Like most of the time those coaches come out and they give you a breather and like, hey, they kind of reset your sights. So I haven't had anyone that's really come out and been like kind of a jokester, but you know, maybe if somebody wanted to throw one in there one time, but yeah, that's the one I remember. Slice, he would always talk about, you know, food. Hey, when do you go for lunch after this?
Well, last one then, but I admit this is totally standard media question where I read your press notes and then act like we're best friends. But the line that I couldn't get over, your dad drafted you in Little League, but in the third round, he didn't want you bad enough for the first. I would either have played the game and knew nobody's going to draft my kid away from me. So I would have waited and signed you as an undrafted free agent because I would have been fine. Or I would have shown the love to my boy and drafted him in the first round. Explain the third round.
Okay, so that all comes back to the assistant GM of that trade, which is my brother, or trade draft, I mean. So what happens is, it's funny. I just told my girlfriend this story because I forget how it came up, but I told her the story. So how it was explained to me was I didn't want to play T-ball, which that I remember. I'm like, it ends in a tie. It just not for me. I don't want to play T-ball. I want to either not play, go down the shore with my mom like that summer, like whatever, like every weekend go down the shore, or I want to play pitch, like a kid pitch. Mm-hmm. So my dad goes to the league commissioner, who was our next door neighbor, and was like, listen, let me just give him a uniform and a hat and I'm gonna stick him in right field, like he's gonna be, you know. So the commissioner goes, listen, I asked the rest of the teams, like, he's like, I would have been okay with it, he was like, but the rest of the teams are like, you're gonna get him like free, like you got to make a pick, like these teams know he's gonna become a good player, like he's out the field every day, like they know he's just young, so like, you're gonna have to make a pick. So my brother said my dad came home and was all pissed off. He said, you believe this? 5 years old. They're going to make me waste a pick on them? Like, are you, like, and my brother was like, my brother asked him, like, well, when are they going to make you take them? He was like, well, they told me, like, probably the third round is probably, like, a good time to take them. And my brother's like, that's brilliant. He's like, take him in the third round. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, because think about this. He's like, if they make you take him, you're not going to take him in the first or second pick this year because he's five. And there's other like seven-year-olds that are a little bit more advanced than him already. He's like, and then next year he's going to be six and they're going to make you take him your first pick. And he's like, so take him now at the third pick, like the player you're going to get. He's going to be better than that player in the third round next year anyway, and you're going to have a first-round pick. And my dad was like, that's actually really smart. So my dad took me with the third
pick. Now, how old was your brother at this time?
My brother, we're almost 9 years older. So my brother's 14, 13 or 14. Wow. My brother's got like a baseball mind. Like,
I was going to say, is he an agent now?
He's a baseball junkie. Like, he, like anything about baseball, he's like, he's read up on it, like whatever. Like, he's, you know, very forward-thinking in that sense. So, yeah, so my dad took me with the third pick in that year's draft. And then the next year took a kid, Danny Baldino, who, so this is the other like wacky part of it. So if you play in the league and you have a sibling on the team, you're automatically guaranteed the rights to that just to make the travel easy and practice or whatever. So the way my dad, he didn't think about this. He took Vinny Baldino, who is 2 years or a year younger than my brother, played with my brother. He played until his next brother, Michael, came, and my dad got rights to Michael, and then Michael was nine when Danny was six, so he got the rights to Danny, too. So it was like, he had like this dynasty of like the Baldino brothers of playing, and so my dad was...
of course,
was,
the name is so Jersey.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, it's a shame. Their dad just passed away. He was unbelievable. He was the man. Oh. He coached with my dad, and there would always be stories of like, it'd be like... You know, there'd be a kid maybe hits the bottom of the order. He'd be like, listen, I'm going to tell you when to swing or don't swing. And then, like, the pitcher would throw and it'd be a ball. And he'd be like, don't swing. And my dad would be like, you know, you're not, like, Jamie, you're not allowed to tell. Like, they have to play themselves. Play. So that's how it worked out. So Danny Baldino was the first overall pick that year when we were six. And my brother was like, it was the best third round pick ever because you got to save a first round pick and you got another good, like, he was the second best player on our team. Fantastic. So, yeah. So it was awesome.
Well, do me a favor. I've got, like, 18 more questions. So in about 2 or 3 months, let me bug you again because this was fun.
Yeah, whatever you got. I'm down. I could talk about it all day.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Zach.
You got it. Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, let's get into the embarrassment now of a 13-0 loss. And hopefully after you enjoyed Zach Allen, so hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did. Now you're rooting for Zach Allen. If he pitches well today, then the Diamondbacks probably win the series because they did win on Monday, but it doesn't feel like it after just the atrociousness of last night. Here's Torrey Lovello.
This is a grinder. There's no doubt about it. You know, we did make some key plays early on. I thought that could have changed the early innings, but you know, we didn't make them. We didn't make pitches, and it did. It got out of hand. It spiraled out of control quickly.
I struggled to agree with him on making plays. First inning, a disaster. You already have a leadoff double, an out, and then an RBI double, and then a walk. So your first four batters are two doubles, a walk, and an out. And the out was reasonably stung. So there's a lot of hype on the terrible play by Jake McCarthy. Bad route to the ball, then kind of stumbles on his on trying to get his feet set as he comes in on it. And says he didn't lose it in the sun at all when the sun was just blaring right in his face. And the ball gets by him, two runs score. Then the throw from Alcantara from his second base position that he cuts off, he throws it kind of into the runner, and Rojas can't get around the runner. Now, I think Josh didn't play that well. He should have been straddling the base to me. But by being on the inside of the base, he allows that runner to come into him. I like to coach somebody to straddle the base and then move as you see the ball coming in. He was already in a position to the home plate side of third, so therefore he had to go through the runner to get to the ball, couldn't get there, ball goes into the dugout. Now, Keuchel looked a little lost. I thought that was a bad move by Dallas Keuchel, and I really don't like it when pitchers don't backup plays. Dallas Keuchel was standing in between third and home, almost as if he didn't know where to go. But you should have been able to figure out very quickly, these guys are going to score on a ball that gets all the way to the wall. So he's got to get behind third base. So that's on Dallas Keuchel too. And that cost him a run. It turned it into a little league home run, which is one of my favorite phrases in baseball. you score a home run because of errors, and most people don't know the rules. So in Little League, when a kid does it, everyone, oh, he got a home run. He got a home. Well, he didn't really get a home run. The other team's defense stinks because they're eight. You know, give him a break. Well, the Diamondbacks defense looked like eight-year-olds on that. So now he comes home. So when you say, hey, we didn't make the plays and maybe the result would have been different, I don't know. Dallas Keuchel kind of stunk the whole game. So if he stinks the whole game, I don't care about one play that cost you some runs. He wasn't able to do anything about it in the other innings.
Yeah, I think his stuff, based on what Carson was saying in those early innings, was really running, sinking, cutting at times. He felt like he just couldn't throw the ball consistently where he wanted to. So I don't know what it was, whether it was the night, the conditions, his stuff. I don't know. We've been talking about that. We can't quite figure out exactly what happened.
As the season starts to slip away, Diamondbacks are back to their 10 games below 500. And it's not like I was ever thinking that they were going to make this deep playoff run, but I didn't want the season to be over in July. I'm not saying it's over, but it's not going well. Your goal now is you have to make sure you understand who's the meat of your starting rotation. So I think right now you've only got three starters for 2023. So that's goal number one. Goal number two might already be set, and that is what's your starting outfield? You know who I'd like to actually see? Okay, there's the chance that it's Varsho and left, Pavin Smith and right if he ever starts hitting again. But I like taking Josh Rojas off a third and putting him in left at some point and also making him the DH. And I think you're a better team, but you've got to go out and get a third baseman. They've also got young Corbin Carroll as an outfielder that it could probably be a starter next year. And then you keep Josh at third, but he's mostly, to me, he's a designated hitter and then spot infielder and spot corner outfielder, a guy that comes in when he has to come in, when you need him to come in to give somebody a rest, not be your 100% starter. And they've got a shortstop in the system. I mean, it feels terrible after a 13-0 game. I don't in any way want to sugarcoat it, but I'm just looking at the performance of Dallas Keuchel and thinking we're not even close to fixing the pitching problem for 2023. And that's number one. Torey Lovullo admits the thing that really stinks about last night was it came off the heels of one of those games where you felt like was going to build momentum.
We come off a really good game. We have a character type of a win where it was a little bit of a gut check and we came out on the right side of that. But we got to be resilient. I think that's one of the key characteristics here. You know, we do things in a very uncommon way and we got to keep pounding. We got to be ready for a quick turnaround, like you said.
Well, one of the reasons why I played Zach Allen for you today is because he was pitching today. So hopefully we get this thing flipped and then, hey, they took 2 out of 3. Do something to the San Diego Padres, and then you hit the All-Star break. Coming up next, I feel like I get to have Tiger Woods on the show. Why? Because he talks for 4 minutes. It's next on Doug Franz Unplugged. Versus Vegas coming up in just a second, but the Open Championship actually starts tonight. It's kind of weird. When I used to do the old show, it was pretty cool getting into work at 3:30, and I never got in at 3:30. I mean, I did at the old show when we were on at 5 o'clock, but getting in at about, I usually got to work about 4:45, 5 o'clock for the 6 o'clock show. And it was always cool walking in during this week because the Open was on, unless I was, you know, on vacation, but it was kind of neat having live sporting events on when you're doing a morning show. Well, Tiger talked for a long time on a question, and I want to play it for you. To me, the beauty of you listening to a podcast is I'm not constrained by time, so I don't have to take anybody out of context. You might say, Doug, this is pushing it, but I want to give you all of Tiger. It's 4 minutes, and I even cut his answer in half. And the reason why is the person that asked this question asked a two-part question and starts talking about how Tiger used to slip boards into his bed when he would come to St. Andrews for his mattress, and he wondered what kinds of things does he do now to get better sleep or take care of his body. And Tiger kind of talked about that. And then, but the guy asked two questions in one. He goes, my second question is, what do you think about, and he asked something about the players themselves on the LIV Golf Tour. So Tiger starts off by talking about keeping his body and how he sleeps and things like that. And then he says,
okay, so as far as the second part of your question about the players who have chosen to go to LIV and to play on, to play there, I disagree with it. I think that what they've done is they've turned their back on what has allowed them to get to this position. Some players have never got a chance to even experience it. They've gone right from the amateur ranks right into, you know, that organization, and never really get a chance to play out here and what it feels like to play a tour schedule or to play in some big events. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the near future with world ranking points, the criteria for entering major championships. The governing body's going to have to figure that out. And some of these players may not ever get a chance to play major championships. And that is a possibility. We don't know that for sure yet. It's up to all the major championship bodies to make that determination. But that is a possibility that some players will never ever get a chance to play in a major championship, never get a chance to experience this right here. Walk down the fairways at Augusta National. I mean, to me, I just don't understand it. I understand what Jack and Arnold did, because playing professional golf at a tour level versus a club pro is different. And I understand that transition and that move and the recognition that a touring pro versus a club pro is. But what these players are doing for, you know, guaranteed money, what is the incentive to practice? What is the incentive to go out there and earn it in the dirt? You're just getting paid a lot of money up front and playing a few events and playing 54 holes. They're trying to, you know, playing blaring music and have all these atmospheres that are different. I just don't see how, you know, if 54 holes, I mean, I can understand 54 holes is almost like a mandate when you get to the senior tours. The guys are a little bit older, a little more banged up. But, you know, when you're at a young age and some of these kids, there really are kids, you know, who have gone from amateur golf into that organization. 72-hole tests, you know, are part of it. I mean, we used to have 36-hole playoffs for major championships. You know, that's how it used to be. 18-hole U.S. Open playoffs. You know, that's... I just don't see how that move is positive in the long term for a lot of these players, especially if the LIV organization doesn't get world ranking points and they don't, and the major championships change their criteria for entering the events. It'd be sad to see some of these young kids never get a chance to experience it and experience what we've got a chance to experience. And walk these hollow grounds and play in these championships.
Okay, we've only got time for maybe two more questions. We'll take one at the back right and then Doug here at the front.
Tiger, you've said throughout this comeback that golf is not the hard part, it's walking. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Augusta's a super tough walk and you struggled physically at Southern Hills. How are you finding your...
Wow. Lot to talk about there. First of all, let's just start with the headliner in what he said.
I think that what they've done is they've turned their back on what has allowed them to get to this position.
Let's not talk about, for once for me, and I'm struggling because I can't stand the Saudi Arabian connection to this. But I'll move off of that. Let's just simply talk about the golf side of it. What really bothers me, because the Saudi Arabian thing bothers me, number one. But the second thing that bugs me from a competition standpoint is the players that have left that are stars built their reputations on the PGA Tour, and now when something better comes along, they jump ship. And I realize some of you, if you're a huge guy that believes in capitalism, and I admit on a lot of other subjects I do, I hope you don't think I'm a hypocrite on this one, but this is one where this isn't about a competing tour necessarily. This is, if it was a competing tour, then the golfers wouldn't be asking to play on both tours. That's not a competition. That's not one tour fighting against the other when you jump back and forth between tours. And that's what the LIV Golf guys want. They want to play on the LIV Tour and they want to play on the PGA Tour. And the PGA Tour is just simply saying, no, we have a tour, they have a tour. You choose. Which one do you want to play for? And Tiger's point is you wouldn't be anything if it wasn't for the PGA Tour, and now you're leaving. And what that does is it takes the knees out of the young guys. All of the guys that earn a reputation by beating Brooks Koepka don't get the chance to beat Brooks Koepka. And now that you're just making this money, are you really going to have the competitive fire to practice? And he talked about the environment, the blaring music. But the truth is, this is not a competitive environment. These aren't guys competing truly against each other and feeling the pressure of, if I don't succeed on Thursday and Friday, I don't get paid. And I just lost thousands of dollars in travel and expenses to play in tournament A, and I didn't even get any money. There's that pressure. And then the pressure to get a cumulative money to stay on the tour. You don't have that on LIV. So therefore, it's not a real competition. And that's where Tiger is fired up about it. And I say fired up, I'm making the assumption, because Tiger never talks like that. But to say they turned their back on it, man, am I with him on that. And where's your incentive to the young guys to actually play? I mean, you'll practice. You know you like golf. But, oh, well, you didn't do well. You still got paid. And you still made a great living. And that's not good for the game of golf. And I love that Tiger said that. And then you bring up the question of, are you really a tour when it's 54 holes? I like what Tiger said. Now, with that great opinion from Tiger, Rory McIlroy, during his presser, it was after the Tiger Woods press conference. And Rory was asked, with you being kind of the spokesperson for the PGA Tour and its members, and you standing up saying what you have, and now Tiger is right there, now more strongly backing, why do you think Tiger is feeling how he's feeling or saying what he's saying?
Well, I think he's the legacy that Tiger's built over 25 years, the platform for him to do it has basically been the PGA Tour. So I think he appreciates the platform that he was given at the very start, and able to play, obviously to play as good as he's played, but then to have that platform to build his brand, to do everything else, just outside of hitting a golf ball, that's made him who he is. And I think as well, he's such a big guy on history and tradition, and he's chasing a record that Sam Snead has held for I don't know how many years, the amount of victories on the PGA Tour. And I think that those traditions and the history of the game are very important to him, and I think he doesn't want to see that all go away. And I think that's a big part of the reason why his position is what it is.
Yes, yes, yes. There's that recognition of, this is what Arnold Palmer built, and this is what Jack continued. And of course, there were amazing additions with with Seve, and I don't want to act like at all that I'm a golf historian, but with Tom Watson and Chichi Rodriguez, and just you go on and on about some of the great golfers, but it does go from Jack to Tiger, you know? And I want to say Tiger and Phil, but you can't because he left. And Tiger's looking at it and saying, okay, I had this platform. I love how Rory put it. He had this platform, and now if you're going to beat my records, you know, play in this tour. And having that handed on to Rory and the next group, and to see some of the players, man, especially Brooks Koepka, he is the definition of a competitor to me. And to see him just bail on competition, man, that hurts. That hurts. Now, another element of the Open Championship, if you didn't know, Greg Norman was not invited to the 150th Open Championship Celebration of Champions. And they said, it's just not a good move. You're destroying the game of golf by starting this breakaway tour, so we don't want you as part of our celebration. And Rory McIlroy was asked about the RNA's decision to do that. I don't know if it was the RNA or if it was St. Andrews, but he was asked about that decision.
Yeah, look, I think it's the 150th Open Championship, and that's what we need to focus on. And I think the focus would have been taken away a little bit if he had been here. So, yeah, I mean, I supported that decision, and I think right now, because of everything that's happening in the golf world, I think it was the right decision to be made. But if things change in the future, or, you know, whatever happens, who knows? But, you know, I could see a day where he's certainly welcome back. But right now, just with everything going on, you know, we want the focus to be on the 150th Open Championship, and this being a celebration of a wonderful golf tournament and a wonderful game in general. And, you know, I think it was the right decision for that.
So Jack Nicklaus is being honored by the city of St. Andrews and becoming an honorary citizen of the city. He's only the second American to ever get this. So he's only coming to the Open Championship to receive the honor. He said, he admitted, I wouldn't be there. I wouldn't be here at all if it wasn't for getting this honor. And of course, at the presser, he's asked about Greg Norman as well.
Well, let me just sum this up with a couple of words. First of all, Greg Norman's an icon in the game of golf. Okay? He's a great player. We've been friends for a long time. And regardless of what happens, he's going to remain a friend. And he and I just, but unfortunately, he and I just don't see eye to eye in what's going on. I basically leave it at that. Okay? Is that fair enough?
You know, it's tough. When he says, I'm basically going to leave it at that, that's got to be how fired up he is. And if you don't know your history of golf, and I don't know it well, but I know it enough with Jack that Jack actually, in a sense, created the modern PGA Tour with Arnold Palmer. And here's Greg Norman breaking away with what Jack built. I can see how, man, that would really rub you the wrong way, wouldn't it? I'll leave the question in for this one. This is the last one on the Open Championship, again, that starts tonight. This is to Rory. And I appreciate how he said, selfishly, but I feel the same way he does.
Does that make it maybe better for the game if you get a player winning that isn't involved in LIV, do you think?
Selfishly, for me, yes, I think it would be better for the game. But at the end of the day, everyone that's here has the same opportunity to go out there and try to win a claret jug. And regardless of what tour they play on or whatever that is, you know, it doesn't, you know, whoever wins here at the end of the week should be commended for, you know, one of the greatest achievements in, you know, this game has to offer. So, I'm not going to begrudge anyone if they win the claret jug and they play on a different tour than I play. I mean, it's still a wonderful achievement, and they're still playing the same sport. But, you know, I selfishly want that person to be me, and you know, I'm going to try my best to make that happen.
You know I'm a Rory fan. It's time for...
Versus Mayo!
Oh, yeah. I almost feel like I should dance just for getting back to 500 again. Problem is, I lost on the juice of being at 500. But man, is it better than the way it's been going. I started 0-3 last night and finished 3-3. So thank goodness for the ending games. I had Yankees covering the run line at 1.5. They're up 3-1. And the Reds come back, tie it in the ninth, and take the lead. And Yankees do nothing in the bottom of the ninth. So I lose on a Reds comeback in Yankee Stadium. Now, I was going to lose anyway because I had them both on the over because I thought the Yankees would club in this game. So I lost them both in the 4-3 game. I took Minnesota, and I thought this was an easy one. Covering the run line against Milwaukee, they didn't cover because they didn't win. Brewers a winner 6-3. So I'm 0-3 rolling into the later games, and luckily I carried them. Dodgers and Cardinals, I didn't like the pitching matchup, so I took the over 8.5. Cardinals won 7-6, so I got that one. Detroit, Kansas City, didn't like the pitching matchup, so I took the over at 8.5, got that. Detroit won 7-5 for a total of 12. And I didn't like the pitching matchup with Dallas Keuchel. I hated picking against the Diamondbacks. Boy, I made that one easy, didn't I? 1.5 was the run line for San Francisco to cover, and I aced that one. So overall record now 382 and 326. And I can't believe I have this many games that I like tonight. Can't believe it. But they're all just staring me in the face. I like the Mets pitching matchup against the Braves in a day game. And I get the runs. So I'm going to take it. Mets plus the run line of 1.5. Going back to Milwaukee and taking the Twins again. I'm not believing what I just saw yesterday. So I'm going Minnesota, covering the run line at Milwaukee. Seattle and the Nationals are in a doubleheader because of a rainout in this series. I'm taking Seattle and to win over Washington. It seems weird to say Seattle playing Washington, like Seattle, Washington. Anyway, I'm taking Seattle to cover the 1.5 run line in game two, not game one. I like the pitching matchup of game two for the Mariners. I got Miami easily over Pittsburgh. I love that game, 1.5 on the run line. And I think the Yankees are angry, so Vegas gave them a 2.5 run line. I don't care. They're killing the Reds today. After that game last night, Yankees are killing the Reds. So I'm on the Yankees hard. Philly and Toronto has a great pitching matchup, so I'm taking the under 8.5 on that one. Tampa Bay has a good pitching matchup. I like them over Boston, and I like them hard. So I got Rays on the cover in the run line at 1.5. And I'm trying to avoid the juice with Baltimore. Baltimore's getting runs, 1.5, but the juice is really out of whack on that game. And I'd rather go with the plus on the money line. And I think they're just going to beat the Cubs. So I'm not taking the runs on the run line. And we'll go with Baltimore against the Cubs. So I got favorites in Twins, Mariners, and Marlins and Yankees, and Rays. A lot of favorites, but the Yankees got to cover 2.5. I got an underdog on the money line with Baltimore, and I got an underdog with the 1.5 in the Mets, and I'm taking the under on Phillies and Toronto. That does it for today's version of Doug Franz Unplugged. Hopefully you like Zach Gallen as much as I did, and hopefully if it's getting too hot for you, you keep using Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical, 602-2 Repair. And if you haven't done it yet, call Ideal Home Loans at 602-899-7000. I'm going to go get a burrito, I think. I'll see you tomorrow. Maybe a Burrito Express.